May it please the court. The major problem in this case is that Michael Taylor never received review of the ineffective assistance of counsel, of plea counsel. Whether the court chooses to afford this review based on the abandonment of counsel or based on the principles of estoppel, something really needs to be done here, because this was a terrible situation. He did not get any review of that, of the IAC of his plea counsel. In Taylor 2, this court said, the summary order remanding the case neither affirmed nor reversed the guilty plea. Basically, what they were saying is that what I assume was being said was, we did nothing with the guilty plea. Once this case came to the second post-conviction, after the summary overturning of the first consolidated appeal, then that's when Taylor's new counsel requested that the state go ahead and not object to going forth with everything that had been gone before.
And I assume by that what you're saying was meant was that you could raise issues regarding the guilty plea because they hadn't been addressed on the merits in the first appeal, but then they weren't raised on the, there was no appeal then made, so even if they hadn't been waived earlier because the court had not reached the merits of it, and so they were still preserved for after the second sentencing, and you could raise everything up,
and
then they weren't raised.
And that's what the post-conviction counsel / appellate counsel, because it was a consolidated appeal, that's what she assumed. Now, when it got,
but then she didn't raise them. She said, she clarified that they were still preserved at that point because the first appeal had not addressed the merits of them, but then she didn't raise them.
Well, what happened was the objection was made by the state that no, you can't get into all these issues because this court, by not overturning the guilty plea, by default.
This isn't a later appeal, though, right?
Right.
But am I correct that, I mean, wasn't there an appeal in between that she chose not to take, that counsel just didn't take, where she could have raised all those? And it's only the later attempt to raise it in like a third hearing that the state's saying, no, now it's too late.
No, to a certain extent, yes. She did, what she did was, after Judge Messina told her, no, we're just here on the second penalty phase, she did not appeal that ruling. That's correct. She did not appeal that ruling to this court. She did not appeal the post-conviction motion,
and the original
motion.
But when she went down for the second sentencing on remand, after this court said there'll be a new sentencing, and there was a new sentencing, and she said, I want to make clear that everything's preserved from before. All my issues are before. Then what happened next?
What happened next was she...
What judge was that before? The sentencing on remand, when this court sent it back down for a new sentencing.
That was before Judge Coburn, the new sentence.
Coburn, okay.
Okay. Then he died in between the time of the sentencing and the post-conviction.
And at that time,
Messina.
And you wait for that post-conviction before, and then you appeal them both at that time?
Correct. It was a consolidated appeal.
Okay.
And PCR appeal counsel did was she went ahead and appealed everything that went before Judge Coburn. She mentioned Leslie Delk and Martin McLean in the second appeal. But only insofar as it dealt with mitigation issues.
And why did she not raise the guilt issues at that point on appeal?
Well, she assumed that this court, by not overturning the plea, had already dealt with the IAC.
That issues. Was Judge Messina, too. Or that was...
The first plea of... the first PCR was before Judge Durker. After the entire Kansas City circuit recused itself, it went to Judge Durker. There was a hearing. He and both his determination and the actual trial went up on first appeal, and that's where we got the one line overturning of the penalty phase.
But you're saying in the second appeal that was from Judge Coburn's resentencing and from Judge Messina's denial of the post-conviction motion. In that appeal, was any challenge raised to the effectiveness of the plea counsel?
Only in terms of mitigation. No, there was no...
And didn't the failure... I think what Judge Stiff is asking is, since that was available and was not raised, does that not preclude subsequent consideration? Weren't they waived there? And that appeal occurred after the prosecutor made the statements that you're proposing would allow those issues to be raised.
Well, I think that's why we have the abandonment here. This is a basically complete inaction in terms of Michael's entire guilt phase.
But can you say
in which this court has?
Can you say it's complete inaction? As I understand from the record, a 100-page brief, which I believe is the maximum in this court, was filed on the consolidated appeal, and
that is true.
Therefore, it appears that the appellate attorney chose her issues and chose which issues to appeal and which issues not to appeal to, and filed the maximum amount of pages for a brief, and so it seems. To call that complete inaction is a little far-fetched.
Well, what she did was she did complete inaction as far as the plea was concerned.
She did raise these
particular
points,
this,
but she
right.
did...
She did act in terms of that second case, basically.
Did she raise this error, Judge Messina's refusal to let them put on more evidence about the original guilty plea?
No, she did not. She failed to do that, and then when we what she did by not appealing anything as far as the guilt phase was concerned is she caused that procedural default. She caused Michael to not get any review, and part of the problem is that it was not clear what was reviewed after the first trial and first PCR.
But isn't that a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel and not a claim of abandonment?
Well, I think that when you're talking the difference between abandonment and ineffective assistance of counsel, we're talking about a spectrum. Okay?
You're saying
abandonment
is
extreme ineffective assistance of counsel.
Ineffective assistance of counsel in a post-conviction proceeding is not cognizable.
Correct, yes.
And isn't that where you're claiming her choices that you object to, that she chose to appeal certain issues and not others, that occurred in a post-conviction proceeding?
Well, what she did was she assumed that certain things were already preserved, and had she known that they were not preserved, she would have.
Judge Crane and Judge Breckenridge indicate a 100-page brief, which I would consider long, but a 100-page brief is a.
It is a stretch.
Be abandonment. It could be ineffective assistance. She didn't pick the right issues, but a 100-page brief is not abandoning your client.
But you're saying she thought there was another forum in which she could raise errors in the original guilty plea proceeding? And that's why
she thought that those were already dealt with.
They were already denied.
By implication.
Do we know, is it in our materials here, what she would have raised or what you're claiming could have been raised?
Yes, Your Honor. She would have raised the fact that Leslie Delk was fired by the public defender system and was receiving no money whatsoever. for her services. She was receiving no money for experts. Her co-counsel had quit the public defender system and had moved to Florida. When Judge Randall kept her on this case, refused to let her withdraw after being fired by the public defender, the public defender would not send her the file. So they sent it to Florida.
Have you shown in the record what you're saying she wasn't competent because of those situations, what a competent counsel would have done? I mean, have you showed prejudice from the alleged errors that you're saying in the guilt? Because it's very hard. I mean, a guilty plea, you don't, it's very hard to show. There's very few things you can appeal in regard to a guilty plea.
She didn't, to him about, you know.
It's very hard to show error in regard to a guilty plea. Have you looked at the law regarding what you can raise on appeal of a guilty plea and shown how the alleged errors fit within those narrow parameters?
You mean why Michael would not have pled guilty but for what was going on at the time? Well, I think that...
voluntariness.
Yeah, the voluntariness. I think that that's what... that's why we asked that it be sent back and reopened so that we can put on additional evidence for that.
Okay, well, what is the effect? I mean, the Eighth Circuit then had this, and even though they found that this was procedurally defaulted, they went through a Sixth Amendment analysis and an analysis for Strickland prejudice on the exact claims you're talking about, the firing of the public defender, the alleged alcoholism of the judge, these various issues. And they found that there was no Strickland prejudice or ineffective innocence.
Well, I think that what they actually say is that he has not exhausted all his claims, but even if he'd satisfied that, then they go on to actually
more
just
than
give
an
us
even
dicta.
If, wasn't it because they said that he has procedurally defaulted, he isn't entitled to do this, but we have the right under the Sixth Amendment to reexamine this, and then they go ahead and do that.
Well, from what they said, it's even if he didn't, we would have found, and at the very end, they say it's necessary that Judge Durker's conclusion is necessarily the same conclusion we would have reached had we addressed the merits. So I would say that is, in fact, dicta.
Okay, so my question then is, what is the effect of that on the claims you're raising today?
What is the effect of
the Eighth Circuit decision?
Of the Eighth Circuit decision on...
Or doesn't have any effect?
Since the Eighth Circuit's already rejected the substance of arguments you're raising about the voluntariness of the plea, what's left for this court to decide? Or is there a separate right? Since this court's never looked at it, or state courts haven't, is there a basis for saying we should look at it, even though it's been rejected by the Eighth Circuit?
Well, I think there is a separate basis, just based on the fact that what the state did kept them from actually reaching anything. The state argued in state court that this was already ruled on by this court, keeping the movement from presenting evidence on it. And then they turn around in federal court and say, oh, no, that was wrong. What we asked for in state court, we don't want anymore. Now we want them to say, oh, he did not preserve any of these issues.
So you're saying, in effect, counsel was misled into thinking that it had already been denied.
That is definitely part of it, mm-hmm. That counsel was misled. And I think that what this court needs to do is, this case does not fit easily into any box. And part of it is because of the incredible procedural nightmare that is this case. But what we need to do is we need to give Michael a chance to put forth and get review on, you know, these issues of the IAC, where these two lawyers who were hamstrung completely, one by being fired, one by not being even in the state and not being, as he testified, not even being involved in the case, up until he came up here and was present for the plea. And additionally, the fact that they pled him in front of judges that they didn't know because they hadn't been involved in Missouri law for that long, and in front of a judge that the rest of the bar knew had a drinking problem. So there are serious IAC issues here, and I would ask that this court give him his day in court.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Hawk, an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Missouri, representing the respondent, the State of Missouri. The respondent would respectfully request that the judgment of the Circuit Court of Jackson County be affirmed. Perhaps that's a bit premature. The first point that I would like to discuss is the appellate court's jurisdiction. This court has jurisdiction to review circuit court judgments. When the court reviews the order of the circuit court did not enter a judgment, the court entered an order. When the court looks at the notice of appeal that the petitioner, that the appellant filed in this case, the document that he attached to the notice of appeal was the order of the circuit court. There's not a final appeal before the court.
We've made exceptions to that judgment rule in PCR, though, because you file motions and they get overruled by orders and then they get appealed.
And that's fine. I just want to point out that this is not a judgment, a final judgment in the classic civil sense.
Because it's not separate litigation. They're trying to set aside something.
Okay. And nonetheless, the state would request that the appeal just be dismissed. But we will continue on with the discussion of the case because if that event were to happen, if the appeal were to be dismissed, it would not be unsurprising for the case to reappear before this court's docket at some point in the near future. The second area that I would like to discuss is the allegation that petitioner, that the appellant presents, that being the concept or the idea that he was abandoned by appellate counsel. And it's not really appellate counsel, but it is a PCR appellate counsel. Now, the court has heard discussions this morning on the concepts of abandonment. The court has heard discussion, not just today, but over the course of years on the idea.
But no, what he's saying counsel did not raise was any issue regarding the initial guilty plea and its voluntariness, which is he's saying he's had never had a direct appeal of the merits, never had a consideration of the merits of the underlying guilty plea, which is not an ineffectiveness issue. If I understand, he's saying counsel failed to raise any issue that the kind of issue you can raise on direct appeal has to do with the voluntariness of the plea. And while it was raised, it was sent back down for a new sentence, and then he had no chance for review on direct appeal, in effect, of that, not on PCR.
The knowing and voluntary nature of the plea has been reviewed by both the circuit court and by this court.
When did this court review it?
That was on the Taylor 2 appeal.
Was any issue raised regarding the voluntariness of the plea?
As I recall, yes, there was.
Because I thought that was the argument, is that she didn't, because the state took the position below that those had already been decided against him in the first appeal, and therefore no evidence could come in on that, and you couldn't raise it on appeal.
As I recall the record, there were issues of the voluntary nature of the...
Do you have a reference on your transcript?
Not on my notes here. The concept or the issue of whether there is ineffective assistance of post-conviction appellate counsel is, as a Sixth Amendment matter, not a matter that the federal Constitution encompasses, and this court in its decisions over the years has declined to expand the...
But again, he's not saying she didn't raise things about ineffective assistance at trial. He's saying she failed to file an appeal of the basic guilt, the plea of guilty. That's not a PCR issue, is it?
Or
is
the knowing voluntary nature.
There's been never a direct appeal of the guilt determination.
My understanding of the contention is that the petitioner, the appellant, is complaining about the issues that are presented in the appellant's brief in the Taylor 2 appeal. What issues are there? What issues are not there?
The issues raised were that that the court denied his request to withdraw his plea because of not being advised of certain things. So those issues were raised, and those issues were addressed. The claims that he would not have pled guilty if he had received certain advice or information.
And to put it in context, that is one of 16 issues that were raised by Mr. Taylor's counsel during that appeal to this court. So what the appellant is complaining about is the issue selection by the PCR, by the Consolidated Appeal Council, which does not fit into this court's description of what, quote, abandonment, end quote, a PCR counsel is. The traditionally, the issues of abandonment of PCR counsel have been abandonment at the trial court level. This morning, the court heard the issue of whether or not to expand that to whether there is abandonment when there's the failure to file a notice of appeal. This case is even a step further than that. It asked the court to examine the issues that are selected by the appellant counsel, the PCR, Consolidated Appeal Council, for inclusion in the brief on the Consolidated Appeal at the time that the direct appeal and the PCR appeal were consolidated.
Did the state take inconsistent positions, and before Judge Messina say that in the initial appeal from Judge Randall's decision, this court had decided against Mr. Taylor on his voluntariness issues, and then in the federal courts say no, that was not properly raised, and therefore it was procedurally defaulted?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. The snippet of transcript that the appellant presents in the brief on appeal is not before Judge Messina, but before Judge Colburn, who was the resentencing judge. And that snippet of transcript discusses what matters the trial court will take.
No, but after that, didn't the state take the position that the first appeal had already resolved all the issues about the guilty plea?
I believe that was the finding of Judge Messina. I'm not sure that there was a position.
But in state court, in federal court, didn't the state take the position that in fact the state courts had never reached it because it was defaulted?
What the state argued in on appeal is that when the petitioner appealed the denial of PCR relief, those issues were not included on that appeal to this court, and that constituted the procedural default.
So you didn't take the position that it was decided by this court in that initial decision, but that it was defaulted later on when it wasn't raised on the later appeal?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Briefs before the Eighth Circuit are available on the Eighth Circuit website, and I certainly invite you to take a look at that, because we were very precise in the arguments that were made there.
So you don't believe they were inconsistent?
Oh, absolutely not, no. The there was a question this morning that was addressed to the appellant's counsel of what does the record show what would have been raised on the consolidated appeal. And I think the answer to that, what the appellant counsel, the PCR appellant counsel, now wishes to have raised on the Taylor 2 appeal, and the answer is no, the record does not reflect that. The only information from the PCR Appellate Council, the Consolidated Appeal Council, is contained on pages 32 and 33 of the legal file, and there's no discussion in that affidavit on the issues that, with hindsight, Consolidated Appeal Council wished she could have raised. The final question that was broached this morning that is requires some discussion is the appellant suggested that we really should remand the case back for an evidentiary hearing on all these matters. The state's position on that is, at this point, there no additional evidentiary hearing is necessary. There was an evidentiary hearing before Judge Durker, who issued findings of fact, conclusions of law, that rejected the appellant's PCR claims. And as pointed out during the opening argument, those matters were reviewed by the Court of Appeals during the habeas appeal to the Eighth Circuit, and the Eighth Circuit reviewed those claims and also found them to be meritless. In other words, the plea was knowing and voluntarily entered, and that's been a determination by the Jackson County Circuit Court and the Federal Court of Appeals. There's no reason to review that issue. Neither of those courts felt that additional evidence was necessary to resolve those issues fairly. If there are no further questions, the respondent would respectfully request that the judgment of the Jackson County Circuit Court be affirmed.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Now, this may seem very basic, but when someone takes a plea, isn't it, you approach that for a minute. When someone takes a plea, it's in public court, and the judge asks them, isn't this voluntary? How is this not a voluntary plea? Who coerced them into taking the plea?
Well, Your Honor, there was a significant record made before Judge Durker about what was going on at the time. We had, there are other things besides, you know, physical coercion that would play a part in the decision of a client to plead guilty. I believe that the fact that one of your lawyers is desperately seeking employment, some way to feed her child, is something that, may have been in Michael's mind at the time. The fact that his other lawyer was in Florida and not available to him, and the fact that a paralegal was making many of the decisions on how to go about defending the case at the time, all of that, I believe, should be taken into consideration in determining whether Michael's plea was, in fact, a voluntary one. The state brought up the idea of that this is an issue selection problem, and that's why I'm asking that IAC of PCR Appellate Counsel be considered here. I'm not asking that. This is not an issue selection case. This is a case selection. She chose not to appeal anything regarding the case of the plea. This court has, and all courts have, in death penalty cases, have seen it as two separate trials, the guilt trial and the penalty trial. And she chose not to address any issues as far as the guilt trial was concerned. As far as whether the state, this court has all the volumes and volumes of prior pleadings in this trial. The state did, in fact, say that all the issues of IAC were previously ruled upon by this court by implication. That was always their position in state court. In federal court, they said, well, no, Judge Messina was wrong in the not allowing, in basically going along with what the state asked. And so they changed their position, saying, no, now there has been no issue, there's been no ruling on the merits. Now he's defaulted. What the state has done is denied him review, and I've asked this court to rectify that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.